Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Friday, February 19th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, we had a little, not a bad day in gold, a little bit of pressure here in the last moments of trade on the New York spot price. You have gold down to 240 for gold at 1229. Silver, little pressure, 0.04 at 1544. Platinum was down 3 at $945, and palladium was down 4 at $502. USDX today, 0.19 to the downside, 96.64. Crude oil came back a little bit, down 0.94 at 29.83. And the paper markets today, a little pressure on the Dow, down 22 points. And again, it was another day where did they even trade at all? 16,391. It was down 40 all day long. I mean, it didn't even move. Just like the other day, when I went up 255, it was there all day. The Dow was down 40 most of the day. It came back last hour or so of trade, 21.85, 16,391. The NASDAQ was up 16 points, 45.04. S&P unchanged basically at 19.17. Although the 10-year still at 1.75 and Euro 111. European markets, Asian markets were all down overnight. Japan was down 1.4%. And let me see if I can get to my little Chinese, exchange. It was down basically. Yeah, and so really world markets barely budged in overnight trading. So not quite sure what that is all about. Perhaps it was comments coming from the Pope. You know, all the news, revolves around our election. I mean, you'd think, and maybe our elections do make the world go round. But it's like, good Lord, another 9 months of this stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Huh? Geez.
Why don't we just hold the election?
Tomorrow.
Let's have the election next week. How about that? And then we'll just be done with it.
Pete's sake, it's just getting, you know, ridiculous now. And there's a ton of other things going on. But I guess for a year, they don't have to report on anything but the election.
I don't know that they don't have to report on anything, but it's kind of, what are you going to write about today? Oh, write about the election again. You know, it's like an endless news story, and for the writers and whatever, you can just talk about the election, either that or the Kardashians.
Do you mean it's
easy?
You've
got two options.
No.
It's relatively easy. You can say whatever you want. Nobody pays any attention.
Well, you forgot about the other one. Who's the other one?
I don't know.
Male to female? Jenner?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's part of the Kardashians, too, so.
That's right.
And you could really lump the politics and the Kardashians together. I mean,
yeah, they're probably all running. I don't know. Got the politics by the 5 o'clock news cycle, and the Kardashians by maybe 10 o'clock.
But yeah, a circus in both areas, in both mm-hmm. arenas. It's a circus. So
I don't know. It's kind of. It's more like a.
And it's sad. It's pitiful and it's sad that our elections are. I've turned into this, but or maybe they were always like this. I don't think.
Yeah, that's probably the truth of the matter. They were maybe always like this, but we didn't understand that because we didn't get reports every 15 minutes on whether or not one of the candidates' shoes were tied or untied. In previous times, you know, the news wasn't as instantaneous as it is now with the internet. And that thing, Norman Mailer described the mainstream media, and this was before there was an internet, but he described the mainstream media as the media goat, meaning that it'll eat anything. And you got to feed it and feed it and feed it, and it'll just keep on chewing things up and spitting them out or doing whatever it does with them. But there is you got to have something to say, all right, for the mainstream media. And, you know, not important what it is, not important whether it's accurate or true or whatever, but does it draw a crowd? Mm. And if it does, that's good news. Good news draws a crowd.
Of course, all lie.
Chases the crowd away. It doesn't have anything to do with truth or lies. It's just how big is your audience?
Well, all eyes are on South Carolina for tomorrow. And so maybe Sunday, well, I guess all the talk shows on Sunday will have all the tallies that comes out of South Carolina.
Perhaps Trump will be anointed tomorrow.
Perhaps.
Could they be the... You know, we'll have him walk in with a cape and a crown and the rest of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Scepter.
Well, in the last 3 months of 2015, earnings declined 4% at the largest 500 publicly traded companies, and that's compared to a year ago. And it was the largest drop since 2009. So I'm glad
2009?
2009.
Did anything happen back then?
I don't know. Can't remember. That kind of followed the Great Recession of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But energy companies, of course, accounted for a lot of the decline as oil prices, of course, we all know, have continued to fall. Earnings growth for energy firms slowed by 75% in the fourth quarter. Excluding energy, earnings did increase just a tiny bit. Sales didn't fare much better. Sales at S&P 500 companies fell 2.5% on the year. Let's see. Low growth outside of energy reflects how much America's biggest companies, such as Apple, are hurt by weak global demand and the strong dollar. And as we know, as the dollar is gaining in value, it makes companies' products more expensive and less attractive to foreign buyers. So, hey, it sounds like another great report to show us how strong our economy is, how we're expanding and growing here in the United States. So,
well, hooray. Yippee.
Hooray. The NASDAQ is down about 10% so far this year, while the Dow and the S&P I've lost about 5.5%, and gold is up about 14% since the first of the year. So, you know, pretty good showing for gold and silver.
Yep, for the first 2 months. We'll see what happens for the balance of the year, but if it could be half as good on a monthly basis as what we've seen since the first of the year, mm-hmm. this would be a really wonderful year for gold.
And, you know, the big Apple, since I mentioned Apple, you know, there's this thing going on between the U.S. government and Apple. The government has asked Apple to supply information so that the government can build a back door to the iPhone.
Yep.
And the FBI wants to make a new version of the iPhone operating system so they can recover items during an investigation.
Uh-huh.
And Apple is saying absolutely not. Basically, what the government is asking Apple to do is to hack using their own users and undermine decades of security advancements that do protect their customers. So it's going to court. And rather than asking for legislative action through Congress, the FBI is proposing an unprecedented use of the All Writs Act of 1789 in order to justify an expansion of its authority. So, I mean, they're all going out. Of course, they're all blaming it on it's the San Bernardino
couple. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple of terrorists, and if there's two terrorists, 320 million Americans have to give up their rights because, oh my gosh, we had two terrorists.
So it's interesting. And the funny thing about it is Apple has given authority many times over any information basically that they've requested. So, and Apple has confirmed this. They have said, hey, you know, just ask us and we'll give you whatever information you want, but we're not going to turn over our operating system so you can create a backdoor to any place that you might want to go. So, which I couldn't understand. You know, so,
And they want to protect their intellectual property. Apparently that's their motive on this. Now, we would hope that their motive is to protect the people who own iPhones. We would hope, or I would hope, that the reason they're doing this is because they know that their customers, part of the reason they buy iPhones is because they expect security. And if they allow the FBI to bust into their phones, their iPhones, it's going to cost them some dollars. But what is their real motive on this? Are they trying to protect the people, trying to protect their intellectual property, trying to protect their market share, all of the above?
It's probably all of the above.
Yeah, it probably is. I don't know.
It's interesting that the FBI is going to this great length.
It's also interesting that Apple is going to this great length to defend against the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all by itself, I don't know what their motive is over there, but from my perspective, you know, I'm glad to see that they, you know, that Apple is resisting.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to probably be declared to be terrorists. They're going to have to declare that anyone who has an Apple iPhone is a terrorist now, and Apple itself is a terrorist organization because it doesn't automatically cooperate with our police state. Then we can invade and shoot them up and not be charged.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So kind of reminds you of the good old days in Nazi Germany when the stormtroopers could just come in and bust through the door without a warrant and kill people. They kill people. Who cares? That's what we have here in the land of the free. I've got an article from U.S. News and World Report. And the headline is Slow Economic Growth? Look to Gold, Treasuries as Haven Investments. Now, U.S. News and World Report is a fairly conservative, old-time publication. U.S. News and Report, I think it's been around since I was a kid. I don't know how long it's been. I don't know how it's been around. But the news here, to my mind, is that U.S. News and Report, U.S. News and World Report, is recommending to people who read the publication to look to gold. All right? There's not that much actually said in the article. I'm not going to quote the article, but it's another indication to me of an idea whose time has come. Mainstream media talked about it in the last couple of days, but this is another leaf in the breeze. Mainstream media is coming around and saying, hey, you ought to think about buying some gold. That means, it should mean that gold is for real. It may be that we have finally turned the page after 4 years of price declines, and we may be a restoration of the bull market that was going on prior to 2011. What was it? Was 2011 when we had the 1900 peak?
Yes.
Who knows? Certainly, if you can judge by January and February, you know, this, and U.S. News and World Reports, maybe this thing has really turned the corner, and we're going to see some spectacular increases in the price of gold over the course of the next several years. So I'm hoping that's true, but we'll watch and see. Any case, U.S. News and World Report thinks gold is for real. And that, to me, is a news item. Melody?
What's next? Yes, it is.
I got one from Andy Hoffman. And it's just a paragraph from an article he wrote. He said, I now believe that negative interest rates for the entire world are inevitable. And with them, hand in hand, the imposition of increasingly draconian capital controls from FATCA and FBAR-like reporting requirements to limitations on withdrawals and capital exportation, and ultimately cashless societies in which investors are forced to hold savings as digital deposits at insolvent banks, in which arbitrary government decrees like negative interest rates will be used not only to confiscate wealth, but destroy all remaining remnants of capitalism. Now, from my perspective, one of the primary reasons people have previously argued, well, first off, just to sum it up, Andy thinks negative interest rates are coming, are going to be all over the world, and we should expect them here in the United States in the near future. And what that means is, most of you understand, if you deposit $1,000, $100,000, whatever, in your local bank account, instead of paying you interest, they're going to charge you interest for holding your money. And that's the idea behind this. Negative interest rates, not positive, but negative interest rates. And one of the observations that occurs to me after reading this little segment, this paragraph, one of the primary reasons people have previously argued that investors should own bonds rather than gold was that bonds paid interest on your investment while gold paid no interest. Gold just sat there. You didn't collect interest on your gold. You could get interest on bonds. And there are people who are saying, you know, you need to buy bonds. Don't waste your time on gold. Get bonds. Well, it wasn't a powerful argument, but it was persistent. We heard it a lot. Today, that same argument can be reversed to support ownership of gold rather than bonds. And why is that? Because investments in bonds in Japan and the European Union charge negative interest rates, and gold does not. If you're going to buy bonds, you're guaranteed to lose, at least in Japan and the European Union at this point in time, and perhaps in the United States before long. You're guaranteed to lose because they have negative interest rates. They call them paying negative interest rates. They're actually charging you money to hold, charging you interest to hold their money. In other words, if you invest $100,000 in Japanese or European Union bonds today, at the end of the year, negative interest rates will reduce the value of your $100,000 investment to, say, $980,000. Now, that's not an accurate number, but you put it into bonds, you're guaranteed with negative interest rates, it's going to be worth less at the end of the year. Right? It's a small percentage, perhaps, but you're guaranteed to lose something rather than gain something. If you invest $100,000 in gold, your gold will not be impacted by negative interest rates. At the end of the year, your $100,000 investment will still be worth at least $100,000. Negative interest rates should help to increase the demand for and increase the price of physical gold. And it should also cause Frank to play the music, the bumper music. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. You might recall that earlier this week, I've been talking about the real victims of negative interest rate. At least the first victims of negative interest rates are the banks, right? When they deposit money with the Federal Reserve overnight or for however long in the past, and even now, they receive some small but positive rate of interest. All right, so they get to make a little money. If they're not lending, they got $1 million and they didn't lend it out today, or they don't plan on lending it soon, they can park it at the Federal Reserve and they make a small percentage on it. Well, the Federal Reserve is going to, assuming the Federal Reserve starts charging in negative interest rates, those negative interest rates, first thing they're going to impact are the big banks that are depositing funds at the Federal Reserve. And this is consistent with the last 6-8 years where we've had near zero interest rates. At least the Federal Reserve held the prime rate down 0.25%. The result of suppressing the interest rate that low is, how did the banks make a profit? And they have been stretched. We've had 6-8 years. I know we gave them billions of dollars, but we've had a period with this low interest rate where we've essentially paralyzed the big banks in that it's not easy to make a profit on their loans. Not impossible, but not easy. And certainly their profits have been diminished significantly by near zero interest rates. And so I talked about it during earlier this week. The point and my observation is that maybe this, you know, we blame all the bankers for all of our problems. And maybe the bankers aren't the big villains here. Maybe the bankers, and I mean the bankers on Wall Street, for example, they're no prizes. I'm not here to defend them. I mean, they would be villains if given the opportunity, but maybe in the circumstance that the Federal Reserve has created with this low interest rate phenomena, maybe the banks have been targeted, right, in a way that they're not necessarily the bad guys many of us have supposed for the past several years. So, having said that, here's an article from a publication called MIC, M-I-C. And the headline is, Top Federal Reserve Official Agrees with Bernie Sanders, Break Up the Banks. This is consistent with what I've been speculating for the last week or so. And it says Bernie Sanders' idea of breaking up big banks to protect the economy from disaster has gotten a huge boost this week from someone very much on the inside, Neil Kashkari, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. He gave a speech on Tuesday that explained how breaking up the big banks offers a robust defense against the kind of system-wide shock and panicked bailout process brought on by the recession back in 2008. Kashkari's central argument was that the Dodd-Frank financial reforms that were passed in the wake of the recession were not enough to tackle the larger issue of banks that are too big to fail. And he says, in part, while significant progress has been made to strengthen our financial system, I believe the Dodd-Frank Act did not go far enough. I believe the biggest banks are still too big to fail and can therefore continue to pose a significant ongoing risk to our economy. Kashkari argues that the most serious problem isn't that the banks made mistakes in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis, but that their mistakes ended up holding the rest of the economy hostage. And I think that's a good insight, accurate insight, an important insight. We expect corporations, we expect businesses, we expect individuals to make mistakes. All right, none of us are perfect. But our mistakes shouldn't be big enough. They shouldn't have, their consequences may be adverse. If I make a mistake, I have to pay for that mistake. That's reasonable. That's fair. But if I make a mistake, it shouldn't be enough to destroy the American economy. And that's where these banks are. They are so big that if they make a really stupid mistake, they could crush the economy. And so Kashkari is saying, no, you got to stop. We got to do something about this. And he argues, he uses for an example, he says, when roughly 1,000 savings and loans failed in the 1980s, there was no risk of an economic collapse. When the technology bubble burst in 2000, it was painful for Silicon Valley and technology investors, but it did not represent a systemic risk to the economy. Large banks today must similarly be able to make mistakes, even very big mistakes, without requiring taxpayer bailouts and without triggering widespread economic damage. Since the Great Recession, big banks have grown even larger and more powerful. Five biggest banks on Wall Street now control about 44%. Five of the biggest banks on Wall Street now control about 44% of the nation's banking assets, compared to 25% in 2000 and 10% in 1990. Kashkari says there's no simple formula for determining which banks may be posing systemic risk to the financial system. He therefore suspects that in a crisis situation, or the broader weakness of the economy, where there are broader weaknesses in the economy, policymakers will once again worry about how the failure of one bank could spread to others and trigger a general downturn. Given the fear of such a scenario, Washington is likely to repeat a series of costly and unpopular bailouts and once again reinforce the too-big-to-fail status quo. Kashkari offers three options. We can break up the larger banks. We can turn them into publicly utilities by forcing them to hold so much capital that they virtually can't fail. In other words, there's so much cash in the vault that you can't have a run that's big enough to break the banks. And his third choice is taxing leverage throughout the financial system to reduce systemic risks wherever they lie. Now that is, you know, that's a statement written in English, and taxing leverage means taxing loans. It's hard for me to imagine that they're going to be able to do that. Goes on and says the first solution is one that follows Bernie Sanders' suggestion, simply doing away with the existence of the biggest banks altogether. And smaller banks serve as one of the best safeguards against systemic risk. And that's what Kashkiri is worried about, systemic risk that can take down the entire system, not just one big bank. He says the other two proposals, which are forcing banks to hold so much capital that they virtually can't fail, and taxing leverage throughout the financial system. He says those two proposals are by some measures more radical. And this parallels to my mind this idea that they are proposing radical solutions to deal with economic problems. We talked about this a little bit yesterday with the Bank of Japan imposing negative interest rates, even though there's evidence already that it doesn't work. They're trying to shore up their economy with negative interest rates, even though they have reason to know it doesn't work. They are conducting experiments, all right? And the reason they're conducting experiments on you and me, as if we are the guinea pigs, they're conducting experiments with, for example, here we have this president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve saying, we've got some options here to deal with these banks. These experimental options are evidence that they really don't know what they're doing. They're at a point where existing control systems have failed. They themselves don't appear to believe that they can control the economy by adjusting the money supply and controlling interest rates. And so they're like, well, why don't we try this? Why don't we try? I got an idea. What? How about this? Let's try this. Worst thing that could happen is the guinea pigs die. Who cares about some guinea pigs? So it's interesting that Mr. Kashkari's speech, he's talking about breaking up the big banks, which is consistent with what I've been talking about a little bit in the last week. We said, hey, you know, maybe the central banks with their negative interest rates, the first victims are the banks. The regular private banks are being taken down by the central banks. And this is another evidence that hypothesis might be valid. What do you think, Melody?
Well, Kashkari, I mean, I'm not sure where he's coming from or what his role really is. I mean, he worked for Goldman Sachs. He's an investment banker. And during the 2008 and 2009 period, they brought him in. Henry Paulson, who was the Secretary of Treasury at that time. I mean, he was a former head of Goldman Sachs. You know, he brings in Kashkari during 2008, 2009, where he oversaw the TARP program.
Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, he's floating around in all these areas. He went to work for PIMCO, which is a very large bond company. So you kind of wonder what his idea is. Now, you would think someone like this knows a little bit more of the workings and how the banks are. And it was his interview that I saw on CNBC earlier this week where he talked about he was pretty confident that you're going to have a major bank that fails. And, you know, I sort of came to the conclusion that it was more in reference to the Deutsche Bank. He knows, but I'm not sure what his position.
Well, I don't think he's just expressing a personal opinion here. That may be all it is. And if that's all it is, then, you know, this is just interesting. That's all it is. But I suspect that he's been chosen to advance policy by the by the Federal Reserve, and they're saying, look, you go out and be the barking dog, and you signal that this is what's going to come. Now, I don't expect the big banks to be taken apart even this year, right? It might be something for a year or two into the future. I don't know. But still, he's floating this idea, and he's warning people that something's got to be done about these big banks, and I can't imagine he's doing this just on his own volition. Say, hey, I got an idea. That's cool. I think he's speaking for the Federal Reserve, and we're going to see what kind of reaction we get out of the banks, whether they cooperate voluntarily and start to shed portions, you know. And it may be that's what they're hoping for. They say, look, if you guys don't start breaking yourselves up and separating portions of your banking operation so you become two banks or three banks or five instead of one.
But also when you talk about turning these banks into public utilities, that means it's government-owned.
Yeah, I know that. And the other thing
public utility, public utilities is just a kinder, gentler. Oh, my gosh, government-owned, you know.
Well, the banks are going to look at it the same way. They're reading this and they're going to say, well, what do you want? Do you want to break up the banking system, and instead of having one big bank or five big banks right now, we're going to turn them into 25 smaller banks? Is that what we should do? Because if we don't, maybe they are going to force us to hold so much capital in our vaults that we can't make any money, or maybe they're going to impose a tax on all of our lending activities.
But what we
which
seen,
is worse, a lot of them will sit back, well, what the heck, let's break this thing up into smaller chunks, and at least we don't have to deal with being taxed on all of our loans. Because if you're taxed on all of your loans, I don't know, I'm sure that would be, at least it would increase reporting requirements. So maybe they're essentially floating a deal, an offer to the banks to say, what do you want? Pick your poison.
I don't think the banks are going to go along
no,
with
I
it
don't
unless there is a crisis.
Too late.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a real crisis where
if
people...
they'll have one bank will fail, which will force the other ones. However, again, you have the interconnecting of all the banks and all the connections of all these other derivatives and everything that are all attached to one another. You have, personally, I believe if one major bank falls, so do the rest. But
well, that's the idea, is they have to act before we get to that point.
And banks aren't going to go along with it.
Yeah, probably not, but they're getting an offer here. Maybe they're making them an offer that they can't refuse. What do you want? Do you want to be broken up into 25 smaller banks, or would you rather we impose a tax on all borrowing and lending, or what was the second one? Oh, we force you to keep so much cash in the vault that you actually become targets for robbers again. What do you think? What's your choice?
Well, they can't keep the cash in the banks as reserves, because those are all digits. You start putting if they have to carry reserves in their actual vaults, actual money in their vaults, that would be inflationary.
I don't know. No, I think it'd be deflationary. You're taking money out of circulation. I think some of it, when you think about it, I think the offer to cause them to put a bunch of money in their vault where they literally can't fail from bank runs or whatever, is contrary to the idea of causing the public to borrow money to stimulate the economy. I think that's just smoke that they've included in this. I think they're essentially threatening the banks. I'm going to guess they're threatening the banks, and they're trying to get the banks to say, okay, we'll come out with our hands up and we'll break this thing down. We'll break the existing banks, the five major banks, we'll break them down.
Two things I do know, Al. Number one, it won't be good for the investor, it won't be good for the people, and we're at break time.
Well, then let's take a break. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Here's an article from Veterans Today entitled 300 Erdogan Terrorists Slaughtered by Russia. This is a couple of days ago, earlier this week. Russia promises to eradicate any Turkish or Saudi forces that enter Syria. A column of fresh militants recruited and trained in Turkey entered into Syria and was targeted by the Syrian and Russian warplanes on Tuesday. Adding that 300, according to sources, adding that 300 terrorists were killed in the raid. Russia says, look, don't come here. We're going to hurt you. Second headline is Turkey chickens out. That's a certain amount of cleverness there. Turkey chickens out. Melody, you get that? Huh? This is from CNN. Turkey's defense minister said his country had no intention of sending ground troops into Syria amid international concerns over Ankara's shelling of armed Kurdish groups in the war-torn country. In addition to the killing and wounding of almost the entire members of the column, the terrorist vehicles and weapons were also destroyed in the air raid. You don't want to be part of, you don't want to be over there in Turkey when they say, well, we're going to send you guys into Syria. That's a good way to get yourself shot and killed, bombed, strafed, or whatever. However, the situation is a little bit strange. Here's another one, said a dramatic escalation appears imminent in Syria. Situation in Syria has reached a watershed moment and a dramatic escalation of the war appears imminent. Turkish President Erdogan seems to be contemplating two options. First one is a ground operation. Second one is a no-fly zone over all of Syria. Both plans are absolutely illegal under international law and could constitute an act of aggression, the supreme international crime, according to the Nuremberg Tribunal, because it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole, whatever that means. The Nuremberg Tribunal says this is a no-no, invading other countries. Erdogan and his backers in the West will, of course, claim that a humanitarian disaster or even a genocide is taking place in Aleppo and that there is a responsibility to protect and that no United Nations Security Council is needed to take such clearly humanitarian action. They're going to justify they're here to help the Syrians. You know, if the Syrians get much more help, they're all going to be dead. Russia's taken a number of crucial steps. Russia's taken the preparations needed to go to war with Turkey. However, the small Russian contingent in Syria is in a very precarious position, far away from Russia and very close, 45 kilometers to Turkey. Not only that, but the Turks have over 200 combat aircraft ready to attack, whereas the Russians probably have less than 20 Su-30, 35, 34s in total. So the Russians have only got 20 aircraft in Syria, according to this report. And that's interesting from one perspective, because our government's, oh my gosh, there's nothing we can do with ISIS. Jeez, this is just hopeless. We'll be fighting them for the next 10, 20 years. And Russia comes in with 20 aircraft and says, oh yeah, there's plenty we can do if we care to do it. The article continues, says, yes, these are very advanced Russian aircraft, and they will be supported by S-400 anti-aircraft systems, but the force ratio remains a terrible 1 to 10. There's 10 Turkish fighter aircraft for every one Russian fighter aircraft, and from my perspective, that's an invitation for Russia to actually plow on into Syria and initiate war with Russia, at least within the confines of Syria. Russia does have one big advantage, long-range bombers. Russia even has the capability to strike at Turkish airfields, something the Turks can't prevent and something which they cannot retaliate in kind for. But here is the next notch, the next step in this escalation process. The big risk for Russia at this point would be that NATO would interpret this as a Russian aggression against a member state, especially if the Incirlik air base is hit. So the point of this article is Russia doesn't have, they've only got 20 aircraft apparently in Syria, according to this article. They really don't have the resources to withstand an invasion without probably going nuclear. All right, and then when we're only talking about an invasion from Turkey, there may be something coming up from the south in Saudi Arabia. They have their Northern Thunder exercise taking place on the borders between Saudi Arabia and Syria, which include 350,000 troops and something like 200 tanks, and I don't remember how many aircraft. But everything's piling up here, and it really looks like this is going to be...
There's going to be a missile going over. Oops! You know?
That's all right. That's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
Make a mistake right now. They could make a mistake.
It isn't funny, but...
Insane. And something insane can happen. Something not just insane, to even say insane. Something horrific can happen. If somebody just makes one significant error. You know, like
I mean,
you said,
it's not like these are small.
I meant to hit the light switch, and I hit the launch switch. It was, you know, it was getting dark in here, so I wanted to turn on the lights, and oops.
I mean, it's not like this is a small military exercise, like Jade Helm was. I mean, this is, you know.
That was triviality.
Yeah, this is 20 nations that are coming together.
I've seen a report that says this is the biggest military exercise there's ever been.
Yep.
All right. And they're just saying, this is not a military exercise. This is just a pretext to get all your invaders located at one place and get ready to push the button and send them swarming into Syria. And Russia will be... They can't deal with 350,000 soldiers except with nuclear weapons. So what will happen?
And
will Russia cut and run? Will they simply be sacrificed? Or will they fight back and say, all right, you asked for it. Here it comes.
And I think that's, you know, I've told you, Al, and it's why I believe they're clearing out Syria, because they know what's coming. I think that's why they're moving all these, well, for other reasons, too, but they know what's going to happen.
Well, this whole thing is to some degree orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm not saying that it's in control, but there are people that want war in Syria.
Yes.
All right. If they can't get rid of Assad,
one guy's in Washington,
by simply assassinating him, then they'll assassinate the country. We're going to handle it like we handled Libya and destroy them for no reason. I've seen reports that the Syrian people are pleased with their government. The majority of the Syrian people, they say, Assad's okay with me. I don't have a problem with them. The problem, we are invading because somebody has decided they want to build a pipeline through Syria, and Syria says no. I mean, this is wrong. This is Nazis invading, and we are the Nazis in this situation, or at least the Saudis are. And insofar as we back them, we are part of a Nazi coalition. We are going to invade and probably destroy the nation of Syria, just because they refuse to install a pipeline where we want a pipeline. And that pipeline would probably compete with the Russian pipelines into Europe. It would be a way of diminishing Russian influence in the European Union, and that may be the fundamental objective. It may be just money. God knows what it is, but these people are entitled to run their own country as they see fit. They're not attacking other people. They're not attacking other countries,
I think that's why you really don't hear much coming out of the White House, out of the administration. You know, I think he's, if you'd have to think it's being instigated by someone, he's probably the one and has the most to.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yep. The Obama administration, the neoconservatives are pulling the strings, trying to get a bunch of other
Russia and even Assad has made Obama look like a fool.
Idiot.
So,
like a public school dropout.
Yeah, exactly. So.
We have, I got another one here. U.S. expects very serious talks with China after missile reports. And the only reason I'm throwing this in, let's do the first paragraph. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said on Wednesday that the United States expects to have very serious talks with China about militarization of the South China Sea after reports that Beijing deployed advanced surface-to-air missiles to a disputed island. Well, the point of this report, this isn't serious business to my mind at this moment. But it's another one of those little ratcheting mechanisms, you know, just wind this thing up a little tighter. If we don't have enough trouble going on in the Middle East, we can have more in China. There's plenty of opportunity for trouble in this world. And China's just one more of those opportunities. And you look at it and you say to yourself, how many of these opportunities do we get before one of them turns into something nuclear? I mean, how much trouble can you deal with in this world before all of a sudden somebody miscalculates, or maybe somebody calculates and does exactly what they want and precipitates a nuclear exchange? Now, I'm not necessarily talking about a strategic nuclear exchange. In the Middle East, we can initially expect tactical nukes. Russia will use, they're not going to nuke Saudi Arabia, presumably. Not instantly. What they're going to do is use small nuclear bombs to deal with the 350,000 soldiers and tanks and aircraft and whatever, but not actually attack the capital of Saudi Arabia with strategic nuclear weapons like intercontinental ballistic missiles. So, but once you let those nuclear tactical weapons, you let that genie out of the bottle, you better know what you're doing, because it's going to be hard to put the genie back in the bottle. That nuclear genie escapes. Let's see if you can catch them and put them back in the bottle. I doubt if they'll be able to do it. And there's certainly, whether they can or not, I don't know, but there's certainly a danger they won't be able to. If they can't, this will escalate. And somebody starts throwing nuclear weapons at some troops, and somebody else, whoever's backing those troops, I have no doubt that Saudi Arabia has access to nuclear weapons. Do they have reliable delivery systems that can reach Russia, or at least the Russian aircraft that are in Syria? I don't know if they do or they don't. They probably do. Short range, drones, that sort of thing. They can probably pull it off. So we live in interesting times. We live in dangerous times. And it just doesn't show, there's no evidence that we're going to back off on this. You read the news and it just ratchets up a little bit more every day. Get another one of those reports. And the world is just sitting back saying, this is interesting. You know, no one seems to be taking this serious.
As long as the stock markets around the world are not crashing, everyone is happy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Everyone is happy.
Yeah, some truth to that.
Yeah.
Which is just foolishness. You know, I've seen a series of headlines that with the crash that happened just in the month of January after the first of the year, they lost, I don't remember, $1.5, $2.2 trillion just vanished, disappeared from the stock markets. Well, there were a series of reports on how enormous amounts of money have just disappeared, not only in the U.S. stock market, but globally. Well, it makes you wonder if that capital can simply vaporize and disappear. Was there ever any capital there to begin with? I mean, it's like dropping a bomb and you don't even find any rubble when you're done. What did you bomb? Was there something there that was real? And if not, what are we investing in? What are the markets? Are they just some sort of an illusion? Well, these are questions we're going to have to leave for next week. And something for you folks for extra credit. You can ponder these questions over the weekend. Melody and I will be back next Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.